This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana, Robin Dow producing, and signature support from the office of the East Baton Rouge Parish Mayor President. The show originates from Investar Tower in Baton Rouge, and we're pleased to have not only the audience of WRKF standing tall and proud in the Capital Region, but also WWNO in New Orleans on the lakefront at the University of New Orleans. And your number, 877-217-5757. That's 877-217-5757. And emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. James Carville, Chester James Carville, is on deck, but we do want to spend a few moments with Tolly Fletcher, Louisiana's only living D-Day veteran. He was at the National World War II Museum in New Orleans yesterday. He's 99 years old. He lives in Denham Springs. He was a 19-year-old, obviously. 80 from 99 is 19. But he went in the Navy on December 29, 1941, when he was barely 17, to serve our country. And then he was present for the D-Day invasion on 6 June 1944. He lives in Denham Springs, grew up in Baton Rouge. And good morning to you, Tolly Fletcher.
Good morning.
Well, congratulations on the overdue recognition. And I have a feeling that even 80 years later, what happened on the 6th of June 1944 is still prevalent in your mind and your heart. Can you give us a brief synopsis of what it was like in Normandy 80 years ago, Tolly?
80 years ago, it was very busy. All the equipment for the invasion was being collected in Britain, and everyone doing their practice runs to make sure they knew what to do on the June the 6th. Actually, we started out on June the 5th, the whole invasion force. But the water got so rough, they had to call us back in and do it again on June the 6th. And I suppose you would say everybody's kind of holding their breath to what it was going to be like on that on that day. So, but there was a lot of worry about the weather.
Now, you survived, but as we know, several thousand Americans gave their lives that day. And anybody who did survive, as you did, is fortunate to be alive. Was there ever a point when you were thinking, this is it, I'm not going to make it, I'm just going to have to die for our country right here in this place at 19 years old?
I wasn't thinking like that, and I don't really think most of them were. We basically had a job to do, and that's the thing that was on our mind at the most. I mean, I'm sure that something passed through our minds about what the artillery would be like and so forth, but that wasn't top of the order at that time because we had other things to think about.
Well, you were ferrying troops on the 4th Infantry Division's Higgins boats onto Utah Beach, and you made it. And you were one of 10 World War II combat veterans marking the 80th anniversary yesterday at the World War II Museum, and at 99, the only living Louisianian who took part in the landings. I suspect through the years, many of the people who were with you who survived as you did and fought gallantly, they went by the wayside one by one, but 80 years later, is it still perhaps the most searing day of your life?
Most definitely. It's we were escorting the Lemon Craft and the Utah Beach, probably 40 or 50 of them. And I was on a submarine chaser, 1301. And our job was to pretty much guide them where they're supposed to go. And there was some shell fire, not a terrible lot of it around us. And we just did our jobs. I was the pointer on a 40 millimeter, and as it happened, I didn't have to fire around because at that point, our position along with escorting them to the beach was to look out for Nazi aircraft, right, which as it turned out, there wasn't any. And when the troops were landing, going from the troop ships to the landing craft, the water was so rough that the landing craft were moving up and down like 3 feet.
Mm.
And it made it really rough for those soldiers that had 60 pounds on their back and then trying to guess where they could, what moment they should release to get down there in their boat. And I really felt for them. But it took us, this was pretty early. It wasn't strictly daylight whenever we started that day. And so as soon as this landing craft got lined up, we left to go into the beaches. And we were probably, I suppose, a mile from the beach. And about halfway in, we started seeing lots of bodies in the water. And at that time, when you see that, you begin to realize you're not infallible, that something could happen to you. But as it happened, nothing at all happened aboard my ship. And we've escorted the landing craft on in as far as we could go, but we couldn't go all the way to the beach because of the 5-foot draft of our ship could only go so far.
Right.
And so we went in and just stopped and waited for them to get on the beach, and that's basically what happened as far as we're concerned. We did have a lot of our
Well, Tali, we thank you for your service, and I know it's riveting for you to talk about this, and it was quite a day, and I am so pleased that you're on the front page of The Advocate and the Picayune today, the only living person who was there from Louisiana on June 6, 1944. You went in when America was sent into war 3 weeks after Pearl Harbor, and we commend you for your service. And we're glad you're alive, and if you've logged all these years since 1945 in the Baton Rouge area, now living in Denham Springs. But thank you, sir. It's an honor.
Thank you. You're welcome.
And now we're joined by James Carville, who was born a few months after D-Day, and he was born in Fort Benning, Georgia. I've never heard the story behind that, but obviously you, like many of us, had relatives, close relatives, who fought in World War II, James.
Yeah, my daddy was stationed as an Army officer, and it was free health care, but my grandpa came to get me and my mom and drove us back to New Roads after 4 or 5 days, so it was a convenience thing, yeah.
But technically, you're a Georgia native, but we know James Carville is Louisiana through and through. And But yesterday, I was talking with General Honoré. Do we have that same kind of patriotic fervor now that we had then?
You know, no. I mean, the country was, you know, remember, we were very reluctant to go to war in Europe. And a lot of things had happened that the United States, I mean, you think about it. Britain was bombed. The Low Countries were invaded and occupied. Norway, Denmark, all of Romania, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, all that was all occupied, and the Soviet Union was invaded, and we still weren't.
Okay, we do have to take an 89.3-second pause in Baton Rouge, 89.9 in New Orleans, and we'll return in short order with James Carville. You're listening to Friday Politics on WWNO and WRKF. This is Talk Louisiana. James Carville is our guest, a Marine veteran whose family, of course, was involved in World War II, and we started with the only living Louisianian who was there on 6th of June, 1944 in Normandy for D-Day, and we've got two people running for president who were of World War II vintage as well. Donald Trump was born right after the war, and Joe Biden was born during the war, which means they're older people, collectively 160 years old on Election Day. But before we hit the break, James was talking about how the U.S. was a late comer to World War II. Roosevelt really didn't want to get involved until he had to. And when we were attacked at Pearl Harbor, we went in. And your friend and mine, Jack Germond, who grew up here in Baton Rouge, went to Baton Rouge High, he said at that time that people were lying to get into the war, that they wanted to fight, and he was one of them. And some of them, of course, lied about their ages to get in. But today, I don't think that would be the case. And as much as we love this country in one way or another, I don't know if we love it enough to make the ultimate sacrifice, James.
Well, I mean, that patriotic fervor came after Pearl Harbor. There was a lot that was going wrong with the world before we got into the war. We just got to be honest about that. And another part of history, and one of the things that mistakes I think we're making is we're not engaged in propaganda warfare, particularly with the war in Ukraine. By February 1945, this is after our friend from now living in Denham Springs stormed the beaches of Normandy. This was after the Battle of the Bulge. This was after the Battle of Midway. Support in the U.S. for the war was starting to go down by more than a little bit. War bond sales were off. And James Forrestal was then the Secretary of the Navy. Unknown little fact, he was on a cruiser off of Iwo Jima. And as soon as he saw the Joe Rosenthal photograph, they telexed it to Washington, and it ran on every page of every newspaper. And his support of the war went back up. But people tire of war. They just do. And we were going to win the war. I mean, there was no way that Japan was going to win. And Germany was done then, too. But the people were just exhausted. And we can never forget that. And we have to continue to push these stories. And I'm just distraught by the lack of support with Ukraine that we have in this country. I think I've been to Ukraine four or five times. I've worked there. But we don't engage. We think that propaganda is above us. You know, Jack Hamilton, who was a dean at Manship at LSU, who's one of the great scholars I know, is expert on the propaganda campaign waged during World War One. I mean, you know, Lincoln was going to lose the Civil War. We're going to lose the presidency on August 31st, 1864. Then what happened is the first president of LSU marched in Atlanta, and in one day, Lincoln was going to be reelected. These kind of patriotic events really drive public opinion, and we need to massage it more.
What do you attribute the lack of support? Now, of course, it is intense in some places for Ukraine, but as you know, in Congress, they've got people saying that this is crazy.
Yeah, you know, it's the old thing. We got issues at home, man. We can't be fooled with that. We got to show up the southern border. We got to, you know, that reading trans books in schools. There's some reason. And you know, people fatigue of it. They don't understand. They have no basis of history. They are mostly ignorant of what has happened in the world between the western part of which is Russia to the, you know, to Germany. I mean, Poland and Ukraine and all these people have been run over by forever, and it always leads to something bigger. And you know that Ukraine's a free country, and they had a territorial, they had borders, and the Russians just came in and blew up every agreement and everything, and then we're getting tired of it. Well, I got news for you. You're going to get really tired if they keep advancing westward.
Well, we have a listener, a good question, this one from Hal in Monroe, about the people who draw analogies, and it's an extremely dangerous thing to do, but in this case, maybe it is applicable. What about comparing Putin, for example, to Hitler? Is there a real comparison there?
Well, first of all, people say you shouldn't compare anything to Hitler or Nazi Germany. Well, okay, so I'm just going to act like the period 1933 to 1945 did not exist. And there are no lessons to be learned. And that's insane. Here's some things that Putin and Hitler share in common. Both are anti-democratic. I'm talking about small d democratic, all right? They have authoritarian tendencies. They have Putin believes that it's Russian's destiny to rule part of the world. He has a very Russia-centric view. As we know, Hitler had a very German-centric view of the world. Neither one of them are trustworthy at all. I mean, if you say who was worse, Hitler or Putin, yeah, you say, you know, Hitler, okay. But there are similarities, and they need to be noted and need to be understood. Putin is a very, very bad man who has a convoluted view of history and historical grievance.
877-217-5757 for Marine veteran James Carville. He's quite proud to have served our country in uniform, and he did so at a time when others did not, including both U.S. presidents of recent vintage. The last two got doctor's excuses to stay out of Vietnam, but that's the choice we have, and we will talk about that as well. But Patrick in Innisfail, the States in Baton Rouge, please be concise. You're on with James.
Hey, James. I saw in the news there's four Russian ships headed towards the coast of Cuba. One would, I guess, that's powered by nuclear energy. Why are we so concerned about Ukraine when we got an island just 90 miles south of Florida where Russia has pretty much taken over?
All right. What about an old story, but one that still has relevance?
Okay. Well, so thus far, Cuba has not invaded anybody. And take your question, but I guess the answer is that their ships have a right to be in international waters. I mean, we have ships in the Black Sea. I'm not telling you it's not concerning, but I would also suggest to you that anything they do, we're going to know. I guarantee you the CIA and the defense intelligence people have every satellite right there on Cuba. But the situation is, you know, Cuba had their revolution, been there forever. But, you know, the international law, Russia has a right to be there. That's just the fact. It's not very good. We have to monitor it very, very closely.
877-217-5757 for James Carville. Joe in New Orleans. Hello, Joe. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. A question for Mr. Carville. The atmosphere in Congress is so hostile to personal respect, et cetera, that I'd like to know, is there any hope for the recruitment of decent people to run for Congress.
Oh. What about the? I hear you sighing. Right. You obviously.
That's right. No, it's such a good question, and it's something that actually I think about all the time. And what really bothers me, and I think the caller, is that young people have become disconnected to politics. You can see it in any poll, any survey you talk to them. And they don't like it. I don't want to get in it. All these people do is yell at each other, or et cetera. And we are about to lose a generation. And a lot of it has to do, with the fact that we have two people with a combined age of 160 running for president. But if we don't have, if our young people and the talented young people.
Okay, hold tight. We'll get James Carville to finish his thoughts, and we'll have more after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana Friday Politics on WWNO and WRKF. Pleased to have you with us. And if you'd like to get under the wire with James Carville, 877-217-5757. Before we went to the break, Joe in New Orleans expressed concern that we are not getting the best people running for office and winning office and serving us as representatives of the people. And I think there is some validity to that. I don't think anyone would argue with it. But while we were in the break, Tom on Bluebonnet sent an email saying, well, we're doing better than we did when we had John Rarick as the congressman from Baton Rouge for 8 years, and he was a member of the Ku Klux Klan. So things have been tough before, James.
Yeah, I don't doubt that, but I just see massive lack of enthusiasm among younger voters. And you know, while we did have Rarick, we had people that were protesting, you know, for civil rights and that kind of stuff. I mean, I'm just sitting there saying that somebody who's going to be 80 this year, who love politics, who marry my wife, you know, who think it's a very honorable way to live. And on the more exciting front, there's a film, actually, some friends of mine put together, and funded by a guy named Matt Tannhauer, who's a world-class director, about me. And it should be out in the fall. And hopefully, what I hope happens is young people see that and say, well, these people had fun doing this. Maybe I should try it myself. Because if you don't have people running for office, if you don't have people working in campaigns, you don't have people working in, you know, public policy and advocacy groups, you're just going to leave the whole playing field to people who profit off of the system. And we had the Civil War. It was terrible then. The period that was really bad was like the late 1919, and the Klan was running Indiana and that stuff. But we bounced back. But I do think that there is a very anti-political view among young Americans. They just think it's crooked and it doesn't serve them. And in some ways, I can't blame them. But the thing to do is get engaged and try to change the system.
Mm-hmm. Well, that concern that we have that the system needs to be overturned and revised and revamped, does that feed into the popularity of Trump, who many of us know is the consummate insider, but is, of course, portrayed himself as the ultimate outsider?
It is a simple question. Do you want the United States to exist under the Constitution we have? And you said, well, the Constitution is kind of... We had to expand it. We had to fight over it. And Trump is talking about jailing opponents. I mean, the stuff that he is talking about doing is against the Constitution. And he is not a big advocate of it. And some people will say, well, it's kind of, we like strength. We want some authoritarianism. Oh, you do? Well, you know, try living without the Constitution, because that's probably what's going to happen to you. And, you know, it's a difficult time. And people, I think, don't give sufficient thought to what they, what's going to happen if Trump is elected.
Scott in Central. Scott, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with James Carville.
Hey, Scott.
Hey, good morning. Mr. Carville, I wanted to ask you, with the Russians, with Putin seemingly, it's obvious they want Trump to win the election, because
right.
they did help him in 2016.
Right.
But
right.
I wanted to ask you if the real reason Putin really so bad wants Trump in is because of NATO. Putin hates NATO. He wants it disbanded.
All right. Thank you, Scott. James?
Let's put a gold star on my friend from Central's head. He is 100% right. And everybody that has ever met with Putin, and President Taylor, President Bush, he says that, you know, NATO, they said they wouldn't expand, and expanded to East Germany, expanded to Poland, and you're infringing on our world, and we don't like that. How dare you be influential? Now, these are free countries. Don't talk about the Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia. They run over them. So our friend from Central hit the pitch right on the money.
James,
it's all about resentment in NATO. And by the way, just so you know, Trump has promised to get out of NATO. NATO hadn't worked, but for the last 75 years or something. If a lot of things are wrong with the world, NATO is not one of them. Thank you for my message.
All right. And we have another James in Longview, Texas for James Carville. Hello, James.
Hey.
Well, good morning. Hey. I fully agree with James' thought on the need for more good propaganda, but in a world of things like so-called Facebook jail, I just think that's a hard sell. What do you think?
I concur, but, you know, we do it not because it's easy, as Kennedy said. We do it because it is difficult. I have really kind of trying to put together, I'm going to do a seminar this fall at Tulane. I'm going to do it from my house. I don't have to travel. And I really want to focus on propaganda, mass communications, what's successful, what's not successful, and really want to focus on the utter lack of success of climate communications, and there's nothing more important to South Louisiana. And I don't need to tell anybody that's smart enough to listen to this radio station that this is going to be one god-awful summer and hurricane season, because it is.
James in Metairie. Hello, James. You're on with James Carville.
Well, good morning, Jim and James. James, you might want to watch your back. You know, Jim, you mentioned about jailing opponents if Trump gets back into the White House. They might want to jail you. Some rabid Trump sympathizers are calling for going after Obama and Bill and Hillary Clinton. Now, you know, James, I want to ask you something. I think what we're seeing is a reincarnation of the America First movement. Make America great again. Marjorie Taylor Greene wants to not send money to Ukraine, but send it to our border. We can do both. It's crazy.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Yeah, remember, we fought two wars at the same time. There's nothing America can't do that puts its mind to it. And by the way, for all of our troubles, we by far have the best economy in the world. I mean, I know it's not working very well for young people, and that's something that we need to work on, you know. But, you know, when I was a young guy coming up, I could go to LSU Law School or GI Bill and get $300 every month and do what I want with it. My tuition was $130 a semester. I didn't know what student debt was. My first house I bought was guaranteed the lowest interest rate, no down payment. Thank you, GI Bill. And I had hope as a young person. I don't know if these younger people look at buying a house. They don't think they can do it. By the way, the big thing is these insurance rates. Good God, you ought to do a special program on that. It's killing people. Killing people.
It's a pocketbook issue. And, of course, people... people are concerned, and they should be, and it affects the ability to attract people and to keep people in Louisiana.
Absolutely. And if you have a mortgage, Jim, you got to have it. It's a fixed cost.
Yeah.
And
And Jim Donilon noted that a lot of people in New Orleans, when Katrina hit, didn't have insurance because the houses were paid for. They went down for generations, and, of course, they paid a big price if they did not have insurance.
Look, I have a place in Bay St. Louis, and my wife and I said, we're not going to get you. It's, the deductibles are so much and the premium so high, it's just take the crapshoot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's all I can say. But I'm older and affluent, so I don't have to have a mortgage. But if I had a mortgage, I wouldn't have a choice. Like $60,000 a year or something.
Yep. Randy and Zachary. Randy, you're on with James.
Good morning, Mr. Carville. I wanted to ask your thoughts about Speaker Johnson appointing Scott Perry and Rodney Jackson to the House Intelligence Committee, particularly while Mr. Perry is still under FBI investigation, and I'll take your answer off the air.
So, I, as you can imagine, I'm not a very big Mike Johnson guy. I did a video. You can YouTube James Carville Explains Mike Johnson. Mike Johnson's problem is the speaker, and that's part of his caucus. And, I mean, Ronnie Jackson was running a pill mill at the White House. I don't know how many stories there were about that. And I mean, Sally could go on and on about Scott Perry. Both of them are firmly convinced that January 6th was a tourist visit. Now, but I understand what he's got a 3-vote majority, and they are part of the Republican Party. I think it's particularly hideous kind of thing they do. But I can't blame him for making these kind of appointments because that's what his caucus is.
Paul in Opelousas. Paul, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Mr. Carville. Just a question on, like you say, trying to get people to vote. 60-year-old black male and working with some young cats at a plant in their 20s. To them, they have no reason to vote. How do we switch that mindset?
All right. What about young people voting?
Right.
What do you think, James?
That is such a common refrain from my friend from St. Landry Parish. I guess I would start with, you may not see something over the next 4 years, but the next president probably going to appoint 2 or 3 Supreme Court justices, and you're going to live the rest of your life under what they do. You know, you may think that there is no reason to vote. But you look at, you know, what's happening in this country, what we're going to miss. You know, you have a lot at stake. But it's very hard to get them to buy into these two candidates.
877-217-5757. We'll spend some more time with James Carville when we hit the last quarter hour right after this. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, and Robin Dow.
Andy Griffith Show.
It's playing a familiar tune. James Carville and I remember that. And by the way, I know why she's doing this. Andy Griffith, God rest his soul, would have been 98 on June 1st, as would Marilyn Monroe, same day. And Don Knotts, Barney Fife turns 100. Where I know he's in the Westwood Memorial Cemetery in Los Angeles, but he 100 years old on July 21st. At one time, he was the only person you had a photo of in your office, right?
You know, I still watch it. I just, the setup in there, the storytelling, it was just, some of it was really funny, some of it was deep, you know, it was good. I mean, it was a very good television show. And I knew Andy. He actually called me from time to time. Barney, I met and have a picture, but I talked to Andy 5 or 6 times in my life.
It was a great show, and a listener already, we've got an enlightened audience, says the character that Andy Griffith played in A Face in the Crowd, Lonesome Rhodes, was a harbinger of Donald Trump.
Absolutely, and you know, he was we'd call a 5-2 player. I mean, he's obviously a great television actor, Broadway, film. He was a great musician, played a wicked, you know, guitar and sang, and he was a 5-2 guy. He really was.
They were both
multi-dimensional
great.
Person.
Yeah, yes, Andy never won an Emmy though, and Barney won like six or seven of them.
Andy got it. He was the setup, and he was comfortable enough to realize he was Barney's setup man. He was the straight man, and he really made Barney funny. Somebody had to be the straight guy, and somebody had to be the comedian, and he understood that. I don't think he was ever bothered by that.
Okay. By the way, Greg Isles, the great writer from Natchez, he's been listening. He says he wants to listen the rest of the way. And if James, I'm sure, will stay with us for the next few minutes. But Greg, we'll catch up.
Greg Isles is great.
He is great, and he's got a great book
out. He's a great man.
And he's got a great backstory, too, and we'll hear it next week on this show. But Chris in Mandeville, you're on with James. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Quick question about Louisiana economy, politics. Under John Bel Edwards, Louisiana had one of the worst, if not the worst, economies in the country, lost population. Do you think this had anything to do with John Bel Edwards' liberal policies?
All right. Oh, my.
Well, what liberal policy did John Bel have?
He really... He was not a liberal. But he was a Democrat, and you know what a Democrat means? It means they're liberal and they like black people.
I know he likes black people. I do too. But look, his daddy was the longtime sheriff of Tangipahoa. His brother is the current sheriff of Tangipahoa. He was the head of the Honors Committee at the United States Military Academy. I guess he wasn't for. You know, harming gay people. I always thought he was really a great governor and a great guy. But I don't expect everybody to agree with me.
Well, today, and, for
know,
example,
blog.
On the national level, we got 272,000 jobs this last month, 100,000 more than forecast. And you would think, based on what we hear, that the economy is going to hell. What's going on, James?
We all create a lot of jobs, and the problem is the economy is much better for older people than younger people. And that was our friend from Opelousas. So if you're old, you're a net saver, you're making money in the stock market. The younger people, the high interest rates are a real impediment to them buying a house. The insurance stuff is just awful. All right, and it's really bad in Florida. It's gonna explode as an issue, and also a lot of it is the cost of education. I mean, people read these stories about how much it costs to get educated, but you see how difficult it is to sort of bring a family. But we forget what the economy was like in 2020. It was horrible. So I can't, if people want to say it was John Bel Edwards' liberal policies, and I don't know, West Virginia is losing people left and right. I don't think they have liberal policies at all. That's one of these things.
Patricia in Magnolia Woods here in the Baton Rouge area. Hi, Patricia. You're on with James.
Good morning. The media seem to jump all over any outrageous thing that Marjorie Taylor Greene or Trump say. So I was wondering if we could kind of help steer the conversation more to substantive things, if we stop clicking on anything like that thing.
But when we hear Marjorie Taylor Greene, I can't imagine that helping, quote, her side. And she speaks for a lot of people, James. She's not singularly saying these things. She represents a whole bunch of people. And she, by the way, is from the greater Atlanta area, which is one of America's great cities and rather progressive, but yet they have produced one Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Well, yes, it's not from Northwest Georgia. Some of it extends to Atlanta suburbs, not a lot. But look, what she is about is clicks. And they know that the more extreme they are, the more money they're going to raise, the more people are going to follow them, the more notoriety they have. And there's no system for discipline in the Congress. Particularly, the Democrats in Congress are actually pretty disciplined. I think Hakeem has really held them together. But all these Republicans are there are independent operators. And she doesn't care. If she aggravates the hell out of 80% of the country and 20% send her money, she's totally happy with that.
David in Atlanta.
She doesn't get interested in doing anything.
David, good morning. You're on with James Carville.
Good morning, gentlemen. Mr. Carville, Sunday morning when Trump was interviewed on Fox and Friends, he was asked would he declassify and release the JFK files and the 9/11 files. He immediately responded, yes, yes, yes. When he was asked as president, would he declassify and release the Jeffrey Epstein files, he hesitated, he stumbled, he mumbled, he said, no, I don't think so.
There's a lot of speculation, but that's all it is. But as we know, Mr. Trump has a past.
Yeah. So let me talk a little bit about the JFK files, because there's something I do know something about. The President Clinton in the 90s ordered a federal judge, who's actually a friend of mine, he's the chief judge in Minneapolis, St. Paul district. And he went through a lot of time in New Orleans. He went through every document and released massive number of documents. There's some that remain because of intelligence and sources and that kind of stuff, but most every document related to the Kennedy assassination is now public.
Most.
And that was a process that was put into place.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are there some things that are still classified? Yes. And I think as we get further away from the date, even those will be declassified.
Right. Mike in Waveland, Mississippi. Mike, you're on with James Carville.
Good morning, Jim and James.
Hey, hey.
James.
How's you? Go ahead. Go ahead, man.
I know you talked with Andrew Bacevich, and I'm just going to ask you to do something that I think Andrew would like for you to do. With respect to U.S. involvement in Ukraine, I would like for you to see what Andrew Bacevich has to say about that.
All right. James, do you want to respond to Mike? Okay, I think we've got James locked up and he's talking, but we can't hear him. James, we got you now. Go ahead.
All right. So to ask me about Colonel Bacevich, who I do know, who came to talk with one of my tutoring classes, who is very skeptical of misuse of American power. I have to see what he's saying about Ukraine, but we don't have an American soldier on the ground there. I mean, this is not adventurism. This is protecting a sovereign country that was invaded unjustly. So I don't know, but I respect Colonel. I respect him a lot. Obviously, I had him to my class, took him around New Orleans. He lost a son to combat, and he has a very important view that I don't necessarily agree with all of it, but I certainly take it all seriously.
Phil, I know you've been waiting a while. Let's get you in before we part company. We just have about 30 seconds. Go, Phil.
All right. Yes, sir, Mr. Carville. My question is this. We spent, where is our peace dividend?
What about our peace dividend? That's what Phil is accenting as we hit the finish line, James.
I think China has kind of interfered with our peace dividend. They're pretty aggressive in the South China Sea. And, you know, I think if anything, we're going to have to build more aircraft carriers, and they're trying to address the recruiting crisis in all forces. But it's still a dangerous war.
Well, thank you, James Carville. Always an honor and pleasure. We'll be back next week. Monday, Dr. Katera Williams will be the guest host. Interesting show. Until then, stay safe and stay tuned.